the Hammer and Rails podcast. With you as always, I'm your host, Andrew Ledman.
And I'm Ryan Bonaparte.
And we're here to cover two Purdue basketball games. The first one on the road at Ohio State, and then the second one sort of on the road, but technically I think categorized as a neutral site game at the Palestra in Philadelphia against Penn State. So we got two pretty important Big Ten games we're going to cover. But before we get into that, Ryan, I've got a question for you. We haven't done one of these in a little while, so are you prepared?
Ooh, first one of the year?
Yeah, first one of the new year, for sure. For sure.
All right, let's do it.
Okay, so I don't know about you, but growing up I had a lot of video games. A lot of different video game systems. So I know you are a lot younger than me. So my question to you is this. What was the first video game system you had, and what was your favorite game for that system?
First system I had that I can remember was N64.
Okay, excellent choice.
Mm-hmm. And I would say my favorite game on that was Pokemon Stadium.
You let me down. Not even like GoldenEye or Mario Kart or Star Fox.
I wasn't allowed to play GoldenEye, the story. I was allowed to play the multiplayer with my older brother.
Okay.
That was it. I was just a little too young for that.
Okay, I guess that makes sense. I mean, there's a lot of killing. A lot of killing. Mm-hmm. A lot of killing. Okay, so I'll grant you the N64 rock solid system, one of the best. For me, the first one I remember having was the original Nintendo. The NES. And, gosh, favorite game. I'm trying to think. There were so many good ones. But I think maybe Mario 3. Mario 3, top notch. Or else maybe Punch-Out with Mike Tyson. But I never, ever was able to beat that game. I could never beat Mike Tyson. Or Mr. Dream if you didn't have the Mike Tyson Punch-Out. Man, that guy was unbeatable. Have you ever played the original Punch-Out?
I have not played it, but I know all about it. I know a lot of people are not happy playing against Mike Tyson.
No, it's unbelievable. One time, my oldest brother and I, he had an emulator on his computer, so you could play all these old Nintendo games. And we had the code to get to Mike Tyson because we'd gotten all the way to that point, and you know, we just kept getting our asses handed to us, got knocked out. And we just played it like over and over, just getting to that level with the code, and could never ever beat him. I don't think it's something I'll ever do. That and the game Battletoads, probably two of the hardest video games I've ever played. But I'll tell you, the regular NES was a banger. You know, you've got Battletoads, you've got Contra, Punch-Out, Paperboy was very good, all the Mario games. Just a really, really good system. You got Double Dribble, Blades of Steel. Those were some good sports games. But, you know, I don't have as much time for video games these days as I would like. But I do still have my Nintendo Switch set up upstairs. And then I actually have all my old school video games up in my office. So I've got a Nintendo, a Super Nintendo, Sega, N64, and a PlayStation 2 up there.
Okay. I did have a Super Nintendo at my grandparents' house, so
very nice. Play
it. But I need to change my answer because I completely forgot the game that I was glued to as a child.
Okay.
It was Ocarina of Time.
Oh, yes. Just excellent choice. Excellent choice.
We had the binder and everything, the like 2-inch thick binder of the walkthrough.
Yeah.
All in black and white from the copy mat.
Oh, good.
That was it. My dad was the first one in the family to beat it that I can recall, and he actually he's lost it since, I think, but he had a Polaroid of the final screen of the game where you're looking through the window in the courtyard, and he is, to this day, that's a very proud moment for him.
Yeah, that was a tough game. Especially the Water Temple, if I'm remembering correctly. The Water Temple was very hard. The Zelda game for Nintendo Switch, Breath of the Wild, is fantastic. Might be the best Zelda game out there. So if anybody is a Zelda fan and has not played that one, definitely give it a play. And they're actually making a sequel. So that, I think, is supposed to come out next year. So should be good. So there we go. There's a little lighthearted stuff before we get into the Big Ten stuff. But always good to get to know our hosts a little bit better. So first game, Purdue traveled to Ohio State. Ohio State was at the time ranked 24th, and it was a 7 p.m. tip-off in Columbus. Ryan, you wrote the game wrap for us for this one, so kind of give me your 30,000 feet overview of this game.
So coming into the game, it was coming off of the Rutgers loss. We had to figure out what this team was made of. They had not lost yet, so this is the first time they had a chance to bounce back.
Yeah.
And
And
it didn't start off pretty.
with a young team like this, you just never know how it's
Exactly.
going to go. I mean, it's the first real taste of adversity.
Exactly. And for the first about 12 minutes in this game, it did not look like it. They looked like a young team, I'll put it that way.
Yeah.
They couldn't get shots to fall. They were turning the ball over. It didn't look too pretty. So eventually, Ohio State got out to a 12-point lead, I believe, was their maximum, with about 8 to 10 minutes left. And then Purdue finally started hitting threes. So they were able to hit three straight while being down by nine and tied the game. Ohio State hit a three to end the half,
Yeah.
and they went into the half down by three. But it was just so positive of a momentum for Purdue going into halftime. It felt like they had just completely bounced back after a really struggling for the first 10 to 12 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it felt miraculous that Purdue was only down three going into the half and had clawed their way back after, as you said, playing very poorly for the first 10 or so minutes of the game. And then, Ohio State is no slouch. They've got a lot of good guys on that team. I don't know if you might have heard this guy's name called during the game, Sensabaugh. He's a freshman. Gus Johnson told us that about 300 times during this game.
Yeah, kind of like Purdue was number one at that time.
For now, yeah. It's like, we get it, Gus. We know we lost. Don't have to tell us. Don't have to tell us a bunch of times, but we'll be forced to listen, I guess.
And also, we can't not mention the fact that Zed Key did get hurt in that first half.
Yes.
He did not return the rest of the game. He went up for a rebound in front of Zach Edey, and Zach Edey, they collided, and he hurt his shoulder. So I believe they said it was a strained shoulder on the broadcast. So he
Yeah.
was out after only 4 minutes of play. So that might have changed up there. It changed up their lineups for sure, but I don't really know if it changed their game plan because they went with
Akpara, right?
Okpara, yeah. And I mean, they're still both big guys, but when you're going up against Zach Edey, you kind of need more and more bodies.
Yeah.
So
I'll tell you,
that makes it difficult.
it was a little confusing at first knowing that their big guy was named Zed Key and we have Zach Edey. And Gus Johnson can talk very fast sometimes. So when he was saying Zach Edey and Zed Key, and it was like, who are you? You gotta enunciate here and take a breath, Gus, because I'm not sure which guy you're talking about. But yeah, it was very unfortunate for Ohio State that Zed Key did, injure his shoulder. I've not seen an update on if he is coming back in their next game or how he's doing, but we obviously wish him the best. So Purdue goes into halftime down three, and I don't know if you saw the article that came out. I think it might have been in the JNC, talking about what Painter did after halftime, where he took, I believe, was it Fletcher Loyer? He took him, or was it Braden Smith? Took him out of the starting lineup and instead put in David Jenkins Jr. And he talked about it being a double positive. Yeah, a double positive is in the Journal and Courier. Talks about how, when you're taking out a guy who's been a starter and for the second half, your goal is to like motivate him to say, I believe in you, I trust you, but you got to take a minute, compose yourself, and get back out there. It was Fletcher Loyer, yeah, because he was 0 for 6 and had four turnovers in the first half. So in his place, he put in David Jenkins Jr. And Painter said, when you do something like that, you're always hoping for the double positive. You hope that the guy who you put in his place, looks at it as a great opportunity and plays well. and that the guy who you benched comes back in and, you know, takes the time, composes himself, and plays how you know he can play. And that certainly worked out in Purdue's favor in this game, because in the second half, both of those guys played really well.
Yeah, they did. It was nice to see David Jenkins actually make shots. I mean, if he's shooting with less than 3 seconds on the shot clock, it seems to be automatic with
yeah,
him now.
Yeah, it's like his sweet spot.
Mm-hmm. So I definitely, you don't want that to be his, what he's known for, but you'll definitely take it. He is a clutch shooter. So, but he went 3 for 3 from beyond the arc in the second or in the game. I believe one of them was in the first half, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, so finished with 9 points, and he's contributing. That's what you want out of him, and it's not enough just to be the person who takes the ball up, gives it off, and then does nothing else. David Jenkins is an efficient scorer. He has scored over, I believe, 1,800 points in his career.
Yeah, that sounds
so
right.
So he's more than capable. So to get that production out of him is what we all have been wanting throughout the season. And hopefully that's kind of the turnaround for him, or the spark that gets him going.
Yeah, that would be great to have, because as good as guys like Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith have played, you know, they are still freshmen, so you wonder about the freshman wall. You wonder how they're going to hold up as the Big Ten season grinds on. So as long as you can make the bench a strong point for this Purdue team, the better it will be. So, you know, the second half was a wild back and forth, just like a lot of Purdue games have been recently. Talk about the last, you know, minute and a half or 2 minutes and everything that we saw from Purdue taking a lead to the strange last possession that I guess was stopped by Purdue's defense. Ohio State really just couldn't get anything going on their last possession.
Yeah, so about 40 seconds left in the game, Ohio State made it a 4-point game. So Purdue with 40 seconds goes down, gets the ball to Zach Edey, and he goes up and does his patented jump hook, or hook shot, gets it to go. Purdue's down by 2 with, I think, 20 seconds left, somewhere around there. So Purdue has the choice to either foul or go for the steal, because that's the announcer's dream, is to talk about this, where you can only you can go for 2. You don't have to go for 3
you
here.
You don't need a 3 here. They can go for
exactly.
A quick 2.
Exactly. And that's what Purdue did. So instead of fouling on the inbound, they forced the ball into the death corner that everyone knows, where the baseline is the third defender. And the Ohio State guard tried to pass it along the baseline, and Ethan Morton got his hands in there and stole the ball.
Which was just unbelievable, the fact that you actually get the steal in that situation. It is so rare,
yes.
Because, as you said, they threw it in the corner of death, the death corner, where you never want to inbound the ball, because he was coming to the ball, I believe, so his momentum is already carrying him the wrong direction, and
right.
Purdue is just, you know, swarms him at that moment, and Ethan Morton was able to just get his hands on the ball and just take it away. It was absolutely incredible that Purdue was able to do that, because it really looked like the game might have been lost.
Yeah, and someone on Twitter actually did mention this from Hoosiers.
Oh, I do want to correct you. Purdue was down 1 at that point, not 2.
Correct. Yes. Okay. And then, so Purdue gets the steal, and they go through their possession after a timeout, and it's a dump into Zach Edey, where if he's doubled, he can pass it right back out to Fletcher Lawyer, or if he's not, he can go up and put Purdue up by 1 with a 2-point shot. He was doubled, he gave the ball to Fletcher Lawyer, and Fletcher Lawyer just absolutely drained it.
Yeah,
so,
just
so
clutch.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, and that's the second game in a row that Fletcher Lawyer had a clutch basket at the end of the game.
Yeah,
this time, and
we were all hoping it worked better than the game against Rutgers.
Exactly, so Purdue's up by 2, and Ohio State's going down the court, and just, they take a timeout with 8 seconds left, something around there. You know, not too much time, but enough to drop a play still. and they get the ball to sense a ball, and he just can't really do much with it. Braden Smith pokes the ball free at one point for to waste a couple seconds off the clock, and it looked awkward
Yeah,
and.
he was like facing the sideline instead of the basket. He was like trying to get around, like maybe a screen was coming, but there was just nothing seemed to work out for them on that play. And kudos to Purdue, I suppose, but I'm not sure how much Purdue really did there other than truly man up, because it really looked like Ohio State was just a little bit lost.
And I mean, he forced up a shot. He got a shot off, but I mean, it hit all backboard.
Yeah,
It
it was nothing,
wasn't a
not
good
even
shot.
close, no.
Yeah. So it was back and forth, and you love to see the scrappiness of the Purdue team just to fight their way into a victory. And because these freshmen are making a world of difference for Purdue, and it's great to see.
Yeah, and is this, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the third straight Ohio State game on the road where Purdue has won with a last second three? Because
I believe so, because Jaden Ivey
Jaden
did
Ivey
it
did it
twice.
twice. Yeah, Jaden Ivey did it twice back to back years. And then, of course, Fletcher Loyer did it this time. So I believe it is the third straight game at Ohio State where Purdue has won on a three in the closing seconds, which it must be the opposite, or the same way that we feel about Rutgers. Ohio State must feel about us.
I
So.
know, yeah, because also Jaden Ivey did it at Mackey as well.
Okay. So maybe not all three on the road, but three games against Ohio State.
Yeah, I wonder, they may have only played once last
Yeah,
year,
that could
and
be. That could be.
yeah, so I think it's three straight times, but either way, I mean, having a good time against this opponent, so
Yeah.
Ohio State doesn't scare Purdue Athletics, we know that.
Yes, it's always been true. So, it just a great win. Go on the road. It's a quad one win in the net. It looks good in KenPom, which helps, seeding, helps ranking, helps everything. One of the best things about this game is Purdue really did find their 3-point shooting again. Even if they started a little rough, and we talked about Fletcher Loyer was, I think 0 for 6 in the first half. He wound up 3 for 6, so he was 3 for 3 in the second half. But overall, Purdue was, I'm trying to pull it up, 13 of 31. Not not the best in the world, not the best we've seen them shoot, but overall, 41%. You love that. So
Absolutely.
a lot of missed shots. Lawyer, had that really bad first half, but as I talked about, Painter got the double positive with Lawyer having a good second half, as well as David Jenkins Jr. playing a good second half to start. So Purdue looked really good for a lot of the game, something that we hadn't seen them do, at least from deep. And then, Zach Edey, as always, got his 16 points, 11 rebounds. Didn't have anything that really stood out. It was just a normal Zach Edey game where you can trust him to get a bucket, you can trust him to make the right play. I mean, four assists as well. So just another all-around great game for a guy who clearly at this point in the year is the front runner for basically every major college basketball award.
And how sad is it? That's a bad game for Zach Edey.
Right? Yeah.
16-11 is bad for him. I mean, that's just so impressive on his end. Just that the bar's so high. I mean, he shot 6 of 11, and that's awful for him shooting the ball.
Yeah.
If he's not shooting 75%, it's a bad night for him. And it's a plethora of.
He's just got everything going right now, and playing as many minutes as he does, it is amazing that he's kept this pace up, and we just really hope that he can continue it throughout the rest of the Big Ten, because as I said earlier, Big Ten season incredibly hard, incredibly difficult, quite the grind. And each week you think, oh, maybe we'll get a breath next week, but you're back on the road, you're playing two games a week, you're playing three games a week. So it's the Big Ten season is never easy, but Purdue found a way to win one on the road. So after this game, they were 3-1 in conference with their only loss to Rutgers. So that is it for this Ohio State game. We're going to take a break, come back and talk about Purdue's game against Penn State at the Palestra in Philadelphia. And we are back. So, Purdue, after winning on the road at Ohio State, decided to play what technically is characterized as a neutral court game, but I believe that might change later on, against Penn State in Philadelphia at the Palestra. So before we get too deep into the game, Ryan, I want to ask you this. Did you know anything about the Palestra?
Nope. I knew it was in Philadelphia.
Yeah. I honestly didn't really either. I had heard of it, I think, vaguely in the past. I knew that it was a really old arena. But, you know, some friends of mine were like, oh, I've always wanted to come to a game here. It's on my bucket list. And I'm like, okay. And I mean, if you're a longtime listener of the podcast, you'll know that basketball arenas, football stadiums don't really do a whole lot for me. I don't walk into arenas and just get overwhelmed by emotion. I just don't feel it with really any arena. I mean, obviously I love Mackey, so maybe that's the exception, but that's just because it is my team's arena, you know. It's a little different. So I was lucky enough to get a credential for this game and went to Philly, took the two-hour drive over to Philadelphia, and got there right after the gates opened around 4:30. And I mean, it's a cool arena. It's got the, you know, the field house look on the outside, so it's kind of just doesn't look like a basketball arena when you walk up to it. But maybe it's just because I grew up in the state of Indiana. Maybe it's because I went to Connersville High School that had Spartan Bowl that sat 5,000 some, and the Palestra seats just over 8,000. I mean, it's a fine place to watch a basketball game, great sight lines, everything else like that, but just because an arena is old, I don't feel like I need to have any reverence for it. I don't know. I mean, it was a fine, like I said, it was a fine place to watch a game, and the crowd was good, but that's because it was in Philadelphia. If you take this crowd and put them in State College, you wouldn't have sold this many tickets. You would have had maybe 6,000 in the stands instead of the 8,000 at the Palestra. So, I don't know. It was a fun game to attend. I was glad I went. I can say I've seen a game at the Palestra, but I don't think there's anything that really knocked my socks off about the arena or the venue in general. And maybe that's just me. I mean, are you a guy who walks into a stadium or arena and gets chills or is like, wow, I've always wanted to see a game
here? I can with football stadiums, not so much basketball, because growing up in Indiana, it's like second hat. I mean, you go to these high school gyms that are seating 6,000-7,000, it's second nature mm-hmm. to you. But then you go to a football stadium that's seating 110. Yeah, that's a little bit of a spectacle, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I went to a game a few years back at mm-hmm. Michigan in the Big House. And I mean, that was pretty cool to see. I mean, it was, you know, it's a giant stadium, but again, I didn't walk in and say, "Oh my gosh, I'm going to remember right. this moment. You know, this is the most beautiful grass I've ever seen." Like have you seen the movie
We don't
Rudy?
Have the Rudy moment.
Yeah, where the dad walks in and he's like, this is the most beautiful sight these eyes have ever seen. Yeah, and he starts crying. And the son's like, come on, dad. I'm the son in that scenario. He's like, just let's go to our seats, man. It's just a stadium. In the arena, it was easily, I mean, at most, 15% Purdue fans. The rest was Penn State. And you could tell just by the color, because most of the Penn State fans mm-hmm. were wearing white. The students were behind one of the baskets, and they made their presence known. I mean, it was very loud and very hostile environment toward Purdue, which is good for this team. You know, it's good for them to face this kind of challenge against a Penn State team that is now coached by Micah Shrewsbury, former Boston Celtics, and of course, two-time Purdue assistant. So he does a good job, and so you know this was going to be a Penn State team that was well-coached and was disciplined, and they lived up to that, I think, and more.
Quick question. Was it as hot in there as the announcers made it out to be? Because they were – Robbie Hummel actually took his jacket off after halftime.
That's what I saw after I got home. I'll say it was – we were – so there's very limited media seating at the, like, court level. So – the majority of the people who are covering the game sit up in the very top. And so that's where I was. I did think it was a little warm, but nothing like it must have been down near them. Of course, it wasn't as crowded up where we are because, you know, it was just media seating and it's like 15 people. Whereas as I walked around the arena, I mean, most of it is bench seating. It's not all bench seating. But I mean, people were just crammed into those seats. So I would imagine if you were in those bench sections, it was probably very, very toasty. Matt Painter, when he came in for the press conference, he was sweating bullets up there. And that's not normally how he looks after a game. So it must have been much hotter there around
Matt
the bench
Painter
as well.
Didn't get the water shower in this one?
Maybe after, but I didn't see it as he came into the press conference. Yeah. So, you know, first half in this game was a tough one for Purdue. I mean, it was a lot like the Ohio State game. And Purdue had two guys who were, you know, going back and forth versus two guys Penn State had going back and forth, scoring the majority of their points. And for Purdue, that was Braden Smith and Zach Edey. And for Penn State, it was Lundy and Pickett. And in the first half, Purdue just could not stop Pickett. He was hitting everything. You know, he hit 3 3-pointers in the first half, and he hit 3 3-pointers all in the month of December. And he played 5 games in December, only hit 3 3-pointers in 5 games, hit 3 of them in the first half.
Yeah, and they were ludicrous shots. I believe he banked 2 of them, and one was just completely hand-in-your-face defense. And not to mention, he had 2, like, finger rolls that were just circus shots. They called them YMCA shots on the broadcast. I mean, whatever he shot, he got in the first half.
Yeah.
It was...
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, not to take anything away from him, of course. I mean, he's incredibly talented. He's a very good player. But you look at some of those shots, and you understand why in the postgame, you know, Zach Edey said it, and Matt Painter said it as well. Even though they went into halftime down, I believe, 6, they didn't feel bad about where they were because they all felt, and I think, you know, the eye test backs it up, that Penn State was just hitting some ridiculous shots. It wasn't because Purdue's defense was bad. It was, you know, that they're hitting tough shots, and sometimes that happens. So you didn't feel bad about that if you were Purdue defensively. So that gave them some hope going into the locker room.
Absolutely, and yeah, you knew water was going to eventually find its level in this game, and it was pretty much just the Zach Edey and Braden Smith show, as you mentioned in the first half for Purdue. I mean, it was either Zach Edey gets into the post, and for some reason, Penn State decided not to double Zach Edey in this game, and he took advantage of it. I mean, every time he would get to that right hook, and it was just automatic, it seemed like. And then...
Yeah, I assume...
Well, and then they found out, okay, we can't dump the ball into Zach Edey. They'll make it difficult for that. Okay, we'll have Braden Smith drive the lane and then throw up an oop. That's all they had to do. The lob, I believe, happened for Zach Edey 4 different times, and it was just... It was one of 2 plays, and it was just simple basketball for Purdue. Sounding.
Yeah. So Purdue goes into halftime down 6, come back out of the second half, and they just looked like a completely different team. You know, it was only 1 minute, I believe, in 34 seconds from when they came out of the second half to down 6 to taking the lead and never looking back. It was 1 minute and 34 seconds of game time. Fletcher Lawyer had hit 2 threes in that time. Zach Edey added a bucket, and suddenly the 6-point lead was gone. Purdue was up 2, and then after that, it was just off to the races. As you said, Braden Smith with the pick and roll and Edey, he was just finding Edey on great shots. He was hitting pull-ups. He was hitting threes himself. You know, Fletcher Lawyer just absolutely had a fantastic game. The second half was just great for everyone all around. You know, the defensive intensity was ramped up. Ethan Morton forced the turnover in the early minutes. Guys like Brandon Newman were diving all over the floor. Lawyer hit the floor. Smith hit the floor. So really, I mean, the second half was the best Purdue's looked in quite a while. I said it was the best they've looked since
Absolutely. Yep.
Portland. And so Purdue had a 19-5 run at one point in the second half. And just to show you how well they did defensively, they allowed 37 points in the first half. Through the first 10 minutes of the second half, so fully one half of the second half, they had allowed just 9 points. So they locked down on defense after allowing 37 in the first half, only allowed 26 in the second. So anytime you can do that, you're going to have a good second half. And Purdue was just able to clamp down on a Penn State team who had really played well up until this point, who really kind of been a surprising team so far in the Big Ten. And this was a game that was a prime upset opportunity for Penn
Well,
State.
and you saw it really just Purdue decided to put their two best defenders on Seth Lundy and Jalen Pickett. It was as simple as that. If Purdue was in a high pick and roll, they would not switch Zach Edey onto Jalen Pickett. That's the matchup that they had exploited in the first half, and it wasn't allowed. You saw it with Ethan Morton was all over the court, and when Ethan Morton went off, it was Brandon Newman who came on and was that defender. It was lateral quickness was just on point in this game, and the defense is really what was the catalyst. I mean, there were even some points where some turnovers that should have been turnovers weren't forced and led to some Penn State points. I think that's the first basket they had in the second half was off of a what should have been a Purdue turnover that just ended up getting kicked out for a three. So I mean, like little things like that, and if that's really all the damage that's happening, you're in a good spot. I mean, it got to the point where Coach Shrewsbury was just so fed up with everything in the game. He got, I believe, the second technical of his coaching career. So Purdue did a really good job at making everyone unhappy on the Penn State side in the second half. Nag.
And in the post-game press conference, Shrewsbury kind of went off on the officials and just Big Ten officiating in general. And I retweeted it on our account, but I thought he made some really good points. And I thought it was interesting. He said when he was playing the game against Michigan, the officials called him by the wrong name, or at least one official, I should say, didn't even know his name. And he's like, that's just not professional. We've got to do better as a conference. Talking about how games are officiated differently, game to game or half to half. And they really need to determine what the point is of Big Ten officiating. And he's just very upset by the inconsistency. And I think he's
Yeah,
got an
that
excellent point.
and you really want it just to be consistent with what they're going to face in the tournament. Like, both teams combined to shoot 10 free throws in this game. That's not going to happen in an NCAA tournament, especially when you have one of your
You would
players
think
is
not.
7'4". Like, and people are hanging on Zach Edey day in, day out.
All the time. All
So
the time.
it's not going to happen in a tournament setting, and people are saying this is, part of the reason there's not Big Ten success in the tournament. It's because you're playing two different styles and you have to learn a new style on the fly. Like, it makes sense and there's merit to it, but
There's merit to it, but I'm not sure I buy it. I don't know that I believe how games are officiated has caused the Big Ten to, not win a national title since 2000 in Michigan State. But I understand the argument. I just don't buy it wholesale like some people do. I think the problem the Big Ten has had is they have not had the elite guards. And guards are how you win in the NCAA tournament. I mean, you look at the most recent draft picks, top draft picks, most of them have not been, guards from the Big Ten. And, there are exceptions here and there, of course, but I think generally you see the highest draft picks have been from other conferences. And that's generally how you win in the NCAA tournament. Officiating has been bad, but I don't think you can solely blame it on that. But either way, I think we both agree Shrewsbury made some points that are accurate, and that Kevin Warren really has to look at trying to fix what is going on with this Big Ten officiating, because it is not
I
good.
mean, and it's a double-edged sword too, because you see, Zach Edey doesn't it has not faced foul trouble this year. He had
Right.
one foul in this game. I believe he had one foul in the Ohio State game. Like, he's not picking up his personal fouls. But at the same point, he's not getting the fouls that you would normally expect to see on him. I mean, anybody who puts two arms on Zach Edey just because he's big, it's still a foul if you put two forearms on him. I mean, that's in the rule book. So it's a double-edged sword for sure. But I mean, it's a problem we aren't tasked with solving. So that's on the Big Ten. They just know that we want them to do something.
Yeah, they definitely need to do something for sure. So there we go. That is the game against Penn State. Now Purdue is 4-1 in conference play, tied atop the Big Ten standings.
They're
And
solely atop the Big
it's,
Ten standings now.
oh, is it solely? I thought we were tied with somebody, but you're probably right. So, Purdue in a very good position to win that 25th. Oh yeah, I guess we're tied in the loss column, but we do have one more victory than everyone below us. So I guess you are correct. We're all alone. But Purdue in a very good position to get that 25th Big Ten championship. And if they can play like they did in the second half of the Penn State game, it's going to be very tough for folks to beat them going
Absolutely.
forward.
Yep. That's what you strive for. I mean, get back to that Portland essence, which that game could have been a away game if we're really talking about it, because that was in Portland against Gonzaga.
Yeah.
But
Against Gonzaga,
oh
yeah.
well.
Yeah, I mean, Purdue's resume at this point, it looks pretty good. We had new rankings came out today. Purdue wound up at number 3, dropped from number 1, so they're behind Houston and Kansas. Personally, if I had a vote, if I'm taking my bias out of it, I'd probably put Kansas number 1, Purdue number 2. I'm not saying Houston is not a good team, but I don't think they have the resume, and I don't think the rest of their schedule is just Charmin soft. So I think they may stay up at number 1 for quite a while here.
Yeah, it's the same argument why we saw in football, Tennessee was number one at one point in the college football rankings. It's
Right.
different methods. At the end of the day, if you get a one seed, I don't think Houston's gonna choose a location in Columbus that Purdue would end up wanting. So
Yeah,
I think we'll
probably
be
not.
okay.
Yeah, I think so too. So, Purdue is sitting pretty. I took a look. I went ahead and logged into KenPom as we were talking. Purdue currently sits at 6th place in KenPom. Above them are, I'm just going to go in order here, Houston, Tennessee, UConn, UCLA, and Kansas. So there you go. And Purdue opponent Ohio State is 12th. Purdue opponent Gonzaga, 13th. And Marquette, 15th. Rutgers 16th. So that is a pretty good cluster of opponents right there that Purdue has taken on. Duke is the next one down at 24. So shows you just how tough Purdue's schedule has been up until this point, and that even though Purdue lost to Rutgers, that is not a bad loss. Even though it did occur at home, and you always want to win it at home, defend your home court. But I think Rutgers, they're a very good team. They're going to surprise a lot of people as the season goes on. But we from this point on, Purdue is rooting for everybody in any game who can help them win a Big Ten championship. However that may be. I think I've told this story on the pod before, but I remember a few years ago. A few years ago, I think it was back when I was still at Purdue. We saw Wisconsin and IU playing, and Wisconsin ended up beating IU on a banked in shot with just a few seconds left in the game. And of course, I celebrated because I love seeing IU lose. And then at the end of the season, Wisconsin had only lost, I believe, 2 games. Purdue beat them twice, and Purdue lost, I believe, 3 games on the season in the conference. And so, if Wisconsin had missed that shot, Purdue would have had a share of the Big Ten title. So you just it's so hard to decide what outcome is better for Purdue this early in the year. But we just want to make sure everybody near the top of the Big Ten has some losses, and Purdue just needs to take care of
For
business.
sure. I mean, you win out, you
Yeah.
win the Big Ten. So that's what we'll strive for.
Exactly. I would love, and I somebody talked about this on one of the message boards. I can't remember if it was ours or somebody else's. Might have been a Twitter thread. That I think the best record somebody has had in conference play since they went to 20 games is 16
Okay.
and 4. So no one has had better than 16 and 4 in the Big Ten once they turn to 20 games. So Purdue, even if they lose three more games, likely would still be able to win the conference. So that is just something to keep in mind as we go through this grind of a Big Ten. And Purdue next in action coming up on Friday against Nebraska. This will be the second meeting between the two because if you'll recall, Purdue went on the road in early December, went into overtime against Nebraska, came away with a 65-62 victory. Ryan, do you think this is going to be another close game, or do you think Purdue playing a little better, maybe shooting the ball a little better, will be able to handle this game a little better since it is in Mackey Arena and the students will be in
Yeah,
attendance,
I
I
mean,
believe.
conventional wisdom says absolutely, but pessimism of a sports fan says just be wary of every game. No game is given.
That's right. Yeah. It is interesting being a Purdue fan. You know, you're optimistic about the future, but you're snake bitten and you're waiting for that other shoe to drop at all times. So, we're trying to stay positive. It's been, you know, one of the more entertaining years that I can recall. So, Purdue currently sits atop the Big Ten, number three in the country. You know, what a time to be alive. We're gonna be back middle of the week. We hope, and I'm gonna check in with Drew and see if he can come on to talk about the recent recruiting class, since we do only have since we will have no games to cover in the meantime. So if we can get that coordinated, that would be great. Give you a look into the most recent recruiting class and the first one signed by new Boilermaker head coach Ryan Walters. Look for that the middle of the week. For Ryan and myself, thank you for listening. Till next time,
Hammer down.
Boiler up.